This is Scott Beck with the Becker's Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by return guest, Dr. James Kravick. Dr. Kravick serves as Chief Clinical Officer of Mercy Health, one of the regions, a brilliant physician, and a great leader. Dr. Kravick, can you do me a favor? Tell us a little bit about yourself, your career, and your current role, and then maybe talk about a little bit about who has inspired you and been the biggest influence on you in your career. What's driven you? What's inspired you? Tell us a little bit about your career and what's guided you and inspired you.
Well, thank you, Scott, for having me. First of all, I appreciate the chance to talk with you again. And, you know, I'm a general internal medicine physician. I'm from Youngstown, Ohio, and I still work in Youngstown, Ohio. And, you know, I wanted to be a family physician taking care of patients in my community. That's what I wanted when I was in high school and in college, as I started medical school. And I didn't do family medicine, I did internal medicine, but it quickly evolved. I never really did what I wanted to do. And I say that with all love of what I do. I never really had my own shingle in my own practice. I went into academic internal medicine, which I loved doing. I was a program director of a residency. About 8 years into my career, I started doing a little bit of administrative work, a department chairman, medical staff leadership roles, and then medical group roles. And then it went into that. A couple years after that, I became the chief clinical officer, which was a new title at the time. It was a new thing for Mercy Health in Youngstown. And now I serve as Mercy Health Lorain, Ohio, and Mercy Health Youngstown, Ohio, chief clinical officer. So that's what's really guided me that way. You know, you asked about what inspires me, and I try really hard to be well-balanced. And I have a wonderful wife, Dr. Cindy Kravick, who's an internist, and I have four children. And as I work, I really, you know, I want to be a husband and a father, but also a professional. And so I see what they do in their work and their school, and I want to be a part of that. And I make every effort to be a part of their my kids' lives, all I do, and with my wife and her career. And that kind of inspires me to do the best that I can do.
I mean, but what a magnificent perspective and what a magnificent family. Congratulations. That's magnificent. Both of you are practicing physicians, both internists, and fabulous. Talk a little bit about what are you most focused on and excited about currently, Dr. Kravick? Where are you most focused and excited right now?
You know, I think I spend a lot of my time in two buckets. One is in strategy and really looking at, hey, let's find out what kind of physicians we need to join our group and our medical staff, where we might put those physicians, what type of surgeries, what type of physicians are we missing, and we can add those. So excited about is working on strategy. Where, you know, where does the new shiny building go? Where does the new operating room, how is it functioning with what kind of equipment? So I do a lot of that kind of work, and that's the exciting stuff. Right. Well, as we have challenges now, and all health systems are experiencing challenges. I read that in your newsletters. I read that in the online blogs and whatnot. You know, as we shrink back for a period of time on spending, because that's just what every health system is doing. I'm also excited about focusing on my operations of medical operations. So, how we're handling length of stay and quality, blood utilization, our primary care core measures like hemoglobin A1C management, blood pressure management, those type of areas as well. So that's kind of another area that I get excited about, because that's really what I wanted to do. When I went to healthcare, I didn't want to be in strategy and recruiting. I wanted to do patient care. I don't do individual patient care much anymore. Still a little bit. I still have about 10% of my time doing individual patient care. But this allows me to manage patient care, manage diabetes, high blood pressure, for hundreds of thousands of people in our community through my primary care doctors and through our specialists.
But this concept of both strategy and back to the basics is so critical and so important and such a pleasure in some ways, actually, the back to the basics of how we're actually taking care of our communities, how we just not through just a crisis, although it's a different crisis now between behavioral health and just daunting having challenges, but back to basics and execution so healthy. When you think about strategy, when we think about the future, you're part of a larger and larger health system. What does the future of health systems look like? Do you have a sense or feel for that? How do you sort of think about what is this all going to look like in 10 years from now? We're going to be so short on doctors and clinicians. they're going to have to be so far out in front on population health and preventive care, or are we going to be able to mint and turn out more doctors and fill some of these gaps, or how does it look 10 years from now?
You know, I mean, looking, so it's 2022 now. Look back to 2012. If you would have asked me that question there, would we have really predicted where we were? Well, I think the health system has changed, but it's not dramatically changed from 2012 to 2022. We have a focus on population health. We were talking about it a little bit back then. So I do think it'll change, Scott. I think we're going to have more focus on overall teams and the whole team of care, the doctor, the advanced practice clinician, the medical assistant, virtual. You know, there's so many changes in primary care. I think that will change. I think population health will continue to become more and more important as far as the metrics and keeping people out of the hospital and healthier ahead of time. I do think there'll be an increased focus on graduate medical education and training more physicians. That is a major problem that I think we don't get enough attention on in the country. I think the medical world knows that, but I don't think the government or the CMS or the funding areas focus enough on that. You know, I spend part of my time, Scott, as the medical director of graduate medical education for Bon Secours Mercy Health. We have residency programs in Youngstown, Ohio, Lorain, Ohio, Lima, Cincinnati, Toledo, Richmond, Virginia, and we're growing it in other areas and other states. And we need to continue to grow residency programs because that will be our pipeline for more physicians and more training. Advanced practice clinicians, the NPs, the PAs are so important in our team. We also must have the physicians to help be members of our team. New specialty care. I used to do palliative care medicine quite a bit. Addiction medicine. We just got a fellowship approved in Youngstown, Ohio for addiction medicine. Those type of areas, we don't have enough physicians in. And I think that's going to be a big focus for the future of healthcare in 10 years from now.
And that's a fascinating perspective on, there's two things you mentioned that are just right in line with what we hear so much of. It's one on addiction medicine. It's just, oh my goodness, what a dramatic challenge. We often hear about the next pandemic, the new pandemic is behavioral health, mental health issues. And within that falls the addiction category. There's so many hospitals and ERs being overflooded with people's behavioral health and mental health issues. There's no place else for them to go. And then second, just graduate medical education and how we've got to sort of upgrade the funding for graduate medical education. There's been a number of new medical schools that have been built, but not a corresponding number of residency spots. So we sort of get this conundrum of how do we solve that? That thing's just so important.
Well, I think so. I mean, I'm in active work with our Greenville, South Carolina hospitals, our Cincinnati hospitals, in Lorain, Ohio. How do we grow graduate medical education? How do we increase our number of slots? You know, if anyone's done this work, it is so precise and you can't make a mistake in the timing. You must have a per resident amount set. You must have in the cap building phase, there's so many rules. And I understand there needs to be rules. I understand there has to be a structure, but the rules are challenging. They're hard and it requires expertise and sometimes consultants to come in and whatnot to really get it right. And I think as we maybe allow a little more latitude and flexibility in the process and the funding and the growth, I think it allows for the growth of graduate medical education. However, we can't scale back on quality and, you know, need for the top-notch physicians as well. So I'm not saying at all expand and lower quality. I'm saying expand with the highest quality, but just allow us to do it maybe a little bit easier so that we can grow more slots.
No, it seems like we could do both. And it does seem like at some point there's got to be some reform of medical education in total. It seems like so many other things have been reformed to be a little more efficient. And it seems like we ought to be able to make this a little bit more efficient as well and open the system a little bit and not reduce quality. You got 50,000 people applying to med school a year now, many of them highly qualified, only 20,000 get in. You got another 1,000 to 2,000 that get in and go through medical school and don't match. I mean, it just seems like there are some challenges that seem quite fixable, quite frankly, but it's a big bureaucratic system. I mean, it really is, as you sort of alluded to. Dr. Gravick, anything else that's top of mind for you currently that you're thinking about?
You know, as I think through this, and I'm going as I do some home renovations, as my 15-year-old turns 16 and I'm looking at cars, you know, the thing I worry about over the next few years in healthcare is really our inability of our pricing as it relates to our cost, right? And so that's something in healthcare I think we don't talk about enough with the general public and with the government officials and our elected officials. You know, I bought a new car for my son, or a used car for my son, I should say. Well, the price was really high because that's what the rate is now. So I had to pay more. As I buy appliances last week, I bought some new appliances. The prices went high because their labor's up, because their supplies are up. But in healthcare, we don't have that ability, right? We can't just raise our cost of surgery because our cost of nurses are higher, because our supplies are higher. And I think that's what needs to be talked about more, I believe, is the fact that we don't have the ability to raise our prices, either with Medicare or with the private insurances. But yet our costs are through the roof with agency nursing and with just salaries in general and inflation and cost of supply. So I think that's something I think we all need to be aware of as we move for the next few years.
So, and this is a huge challenge, quite frankly, that we're in a spot where there's just very little ability to raise prices because of either you're either with payers that aren't very flexible, you're with CMS, which is completely inflexible, you're with Medicaid, which is completely inflexible, and at the same time, you've got this level of cost throughout the system. So you got 2% raises in reimbursement and 15% raises in cost. And the numbers just don't work, quite frankly, to your point. No, I couldn't agree with you more. Dr. Kravick, it's always great to visit with you. Can't wait to see you again at one of our meetings. Just a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time out today to visit with us on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.